World War II, a time of unrelenting global trauma, stretching from 1939 to 1945. It involved all of the great powers of the time. It was the most destructive episode in the history of civilization. It required its major forces to dedicate their entire military, economic, industrial, and scientific capabilities to the cause of warfare. Estimates of the death toll vary, from 50 million to 85 million worldwide. World War II took the art of war to new and appalling heights through massacre, genocide, remorseless bombing raids, starvation, disease, and the first use of nuclear weapons. When George O'Callaghan saw an aircraft in a paddock near his boyhood home, he became fascinated by the concept of flight. That led to enlistment in the RAAF and an opportunity to leave behind the difficulties he'd experienced in country Australia.
I had a very, very hard life.
Go on.
I was kept in a backyard. Nobody was to know who I was or that cat. My mother had four kids out of wedlock, three boys and a girl, and I was the second boy by four different fathers, four different bulls. And Grandma, my mother worked in the Bull's Head Hotel as a cook. That was 3 miles from where Grandma lived. And Grandma had a hotel in North Wangaratta opposite the pub, and I lived there with her. And in that same house, there was my mother's sister with 8 kids. And we used to sleep in a double bed, 6 in the bed, 3 at each end. And every night, there was trouble, and I got the blame for it. I was kept in the backyard, not allowed out. All the others went to the show, and I never went anywhere. I had to do all the, empty the dunny, cut the wood, and everything like that, water the ducks, and I was real a slave, you know.
Why you? Why do they pick on you for that?
Because I suppose my mother, you know, having kids out of wedlock, and she was 3 miles away. Mm-hmm. I don't even know whether she paid Grandma for anything.
Yes.
Because in them days there was no pension, or there was no dole, you know. They used to go and get handouts at the council.
What was Mum's first name?
My mother.
Yes.
Nellie.
Nellie,
N-E-L-L-I-E. Yeah, Nellie O'Callaghan.
Yeah. So I noticed on your enlistment, your next of kin was Agnes. Was that...
That's me... Next of kin.
Yes.
That was my half-sister.
Your half-sister.
Yes.
Did you ever know who your father was, George?
Until I was 35.
You didn't know?
Yeah. He was in the cemetery when I found him.
Yeah. What was his name?
Charlie Harris.
Charlie Harris.
Yes.
What do you know about him? What did you discover?
No. I've got something to find out.
Yeah?
And I will eventually find it out.
Good on you. Okay.
Whether he committed adultery.
Yes.
You know, that's what I'd like to know.
You were looking for something there. You're looking for a photograph or something? No? No, you've got all your reminiscences there. We're going to have a look through the album a bit later. And you're going through the papers right now. What do you want to show me?
There's something I wanted to... What I've just told you, I've got proof of all that. You know what I mean?
So we're looking through George's remarkable collection of family archives here. And we're pulling out of an envelope some documents which talk about marriage and births and all sorts of things.
That's my marriage certificate.
That's your own marriage certificate. Yeah. Right, okay.
Oh, that's the family.
Right. Oh, we'll have a look at that shortly.
Yeah, sure.
Let's get back to those early days. They've sent you off to school, though.
Yeah, we walked 2¾ miles to school on a dirt road.
Yep.
And come home. And when Grandma had 2 cows.
Yep.
And we only living on an acre. And they used to be let out on the road when they were milked. I had to milk them morning and night. No, night time I milked them. And they'd wander on the roads. And when I come home from school, Grandma'd say, the cows went that way. So I'd go up and ask Mr. Morrison, did you see the cows? They were here at dinner time and they'd gone that way. One night I never got home till 9:15,
yes.
You know, walking up the roads.
The crowd, you could round them up all right and get them back?
Oh, they'd go home.
They'd go home.
Yeah, and Grandma had a white horse called Tom. And he used to bite the cow. I used to pull him up against the fence, get up on top of the post and get on him without a bridle and a saddle.
Yeah.
And he used to bite the cows on the bum because he knew they had to get him home, you know.
And did you ride the horse home?
Without winkers or anything. He was a lovely horse.
Just clutching onto the mane, I suppose.
Yeah, the mane, yeah.
Well done.
But he only walked, you know.
It was a hard life, mate. Very hard life.
A shit of a life. Yeah. A hard life. Yeah. But I got no regrets because that was a way of life during the Depression, in them days.
Can you remember also, you had to go to school? Just describe the schoolroom for me, what it was like.
A big room.
Yep.
There was only 13 at the school, mainly farmers' daughters and husbands. Dockers Plains.
Yes.
Was owned by a fellow by the name of Docker that came out like Bungaree. You know, I believe that the fellow that owned Bungaree, now it's all divided up.
Yep.
He got on a hill there and he said, I want what I can see. And they worked it and got it free, you know, from the government. And Docker was one, a fellow like that, and he donated some land in the corner of a paddock and they built a school there.
Right.
And that's where we went to school.
So
it's down there, finished in 47.
One teacher school, 13 children.
Yes. Okay. Bernie Rosengreen.
Were you a good boy, school?
I did get the strap a couple of times.
Yeah. Was there something you did once that deserved the strap? You were cheating? Or you were trying to copy a girl's work? Something like that, wasn't there?
No. I don't know much about this. I told you about getting a strap.
That's what I want to hear about.
Oh. I don't know what was going on at school or anything like that. It might have been... wasn't sex because you never got sex, but it was something to do with the girls. I'll tell you one instance.
Yeah.
There was a boys' toilet and a girls' toilet, and I was sitting on the seat of the gents' toilet, and a snake appeared, and they ran up and got the teacher, and he shot it while I was sitting on the...
Frightened you a bit.
Frightened hell out of me because I didn't know.
I thought there was another time you were telling me where you were looking over a girl's shoulder and... tell me now about it. What do I want to hear about it now?
Well, there was a girl by the name of Kathleen Charlton.
Yep.
When it was wet, Bill Charlton used to take us, her father, used to take her to school in a horse and cart.
Yep.
And he'd give us a ride. You know, we never had a horse and cart or anything. And she was in front. There were three in the grade eight.
Yep.
There was her in front of me, and then my cousin. He left school in November. And I kept going to school to get me merit. And we had an exam, and I leant over his shoulder and cheated. That might have been one of the times I got the strap.
You got the strap for that. But didn't you do something to try to escape the pain of the strap?
Oh, yeah. I got my tongue pretty wet, and I run it down the strap mark used to go up past your wrist.
Right, yeah.
And I run like that, eh?
So you're licking your hand now, right?
Yeah, and it's all wet.
Yeah.
And when the strap hit that, it didn't hurt.
Yep.
Right? And the teacher said, why is that hand wet? And I said, I don't want it to hurt me. And he said, well, pull out the other one.
And you got the strap all this time.
Yeah, I got the strap, yeah.
But you stayed and you did your merit, as you called it in those days.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I went set me. Oh, when it stood for the merit, I had to go into the Wangaratta High School because when you stood for your merit in them days, if you missed out on a subject, you had a chance to go and do it again.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
But when my exam was on in the high school, I got prickly heat. Means I've lost one chance right through, and I had no, but I'd done it and got it.
Okay.
I was milking cows at Uncle Charlie's farm.
Yep.
one Sunday night, and Bernie Rosengreen, the teacher, he used to play cricket for the Catholic school in Wangaratta. He pulled up and he came in and he said, "Uncle Charlie, where's Georgie?" Uncle Charlie said, "They're milking a cow." So he come around and put his arm over his shoulder and he said, "You got your milk."
Hey, well done.
And that was lovely.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
And the cow went mad, knocked the bucket of milk over, and Uncle Charlie went cook.
Oh. So you were going to school, you had to get your merit, you were walking quite a long distance.
2¾ miles every day to school.
What's the time for recreation, sport? Entertainment?
At school.
There was sports
cricket,
school.
Cricket mainly. Yep. Oh, we had a sports day every day, every year.
Yep.
They used to, there was a gum tree opposite the school that used to have a limb and come down low and we used to swing on it, you know, and that sort of jazz. Yep. And they used to have a contest where they'd tie a bun on a piece of string on the limb.
Yep.
And we weren't allowed to touch the bun. And we had to eat it, you know. And the teacher used to pull the limb down and let it go. Oh, that was great days.
Glad to hear you say that. Hard life, but great days.
Well, put it this way. No other school done it, you know.
Did you go to church?
Yeah. Grandma had a white horse, Tom, and a cart.
Yep.
And she used to get him ready every Sunday. And we'd go 3 miles in the church.
Yes.
And we'd pick up kids on the way. But I went one Sunday. There was no room for me in the cart. And I sat on top of the horse amongst the saddle.
And what church was this, George?
Presbyterian.
Yes. So that was pretty strict. No drinking, no smoking.
Oh, yeah. Church was very...
No sex?
Not like it is now.
No.
They had... seats in there now, they've got chairs in church in there. And at the back of the seat, like the back of the seat in front of you, had a shelf at the back where they had bread and wine, you know, when they had communion and you drank it from there. Now they give it here, but the older.
Were you allowed to sit with the girls or were they segregated?
Oh, that didn't matter. We never had any trouble with women, you know, that sort of caper. None whatsoever.
What about early girlfriends?
No worries.
No?
The only girlfriend I had was the one in Adelaide. And I married her.
Oh, that's all right. We'll hear about that later.
Yeah, all right.
So, you left school, what age?
14 in 1938.
And then you saw an ad for a job, I believe.
That's right, yes.
Tell us about that.
An ad in the paper, this fella that owned the menswear store, he took a liking to me and helped me quite a lot, put me on the right track into the main street of Wangaratta.
Yeah.
And he rode away and got me this job in the railways as a supernumerary lad porter.
So the Victorian Railways was advertising for porters?
For porters, yeah.
Okay.
So I went down to Melbourne.
Yep.
You know, young fella.
Yeah. Good on you.
And got interviewed there, you know, like, and I was working in the goods yards,
yes,
where the football oval is now, you know.
The Etihad Stadium. Really?
Yeah. That was good yards.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. Okay. So
near the Spencer Street Railway.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
So you did your training, you did your course, and you were qualified to work on the railways.
Yes.
And that was 1940, because you were born in 24.
Yeah, I was 42, I think, when I went 38.
38, yep. Yeah.
I'll tell you something else that happened that I've never forgotten. When the war broke out, we didn't know much about war, you know, as kids. And Uncle Charlie was rounding up the cows on a horse, and another fella rocked up in a horse, and they got talking, and I was standing on the ground, you know, where they were talking. And this other fella said to Uncle Charlie, he said, "A good way to remember the Second World War is 3939.
Yes.
Third of the ninth, yes. 39.
Yes.
And I've never forgotten.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll remember that too.
Yeah.
So you'd got the support of this man who ran the menswear shop.
Yeah, Mr. McLaughlin.
Had you been working for him? Or
no, no, it's just that, you know.
He liked you. Okay.
Yeah, it was. You couldn't get a job anywhere,
no,
you know.
And, no.
Oh, it was a different life.
Yeah.
I made a statement the other day, I reckon, that another old fellow like me, I said, at least we can say we lived in Australia when it was at its best.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, when you say at its best, what was good about it?
What was a magnificent country.
Yes?
A magnificent country. Absolutely.
In what respect? Freedom or
food? I've never had any trouble with work. And
yeah, I see.
I've never had any trouble with thieving or, you know, and jail. Or I've never been, you know.
But you were boarding in Melbourne at a boarding house?
Near Carlton.
Near Carlton?
Carlton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's to you somewhere.
Yeah, we'll have a look at that.
Yeah, I'll get
it
for you.
But you had a bit of a problem one night. You got attacked. Something happened to you, didn't you? You were at the street, you were in Auburn, and you had a bit of trouble one night?
Oh, when I was in the railway.
Yes,
with those
pushers. Were they? What happened?
Well, they get me in the front of a shop, and they'd be putting their hand on my penis, you know, and all that sort of thing.
So this was
That happened about six times.
This was a gang of men at Auburn.
Well, I wouldn't say a gang, it was just an individual.
I see.
And it might happen, say, every month or something like that, you know. I feel that they found out that I was from the country,
yeah,
you know, and I was easy prey.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's what I came
at. Why were you at Auburn Station? And
that's posting by the Victorian.
A posting, I see. I've got
by
you.
By Victorian Railway.
Yeah, okay.
I used to go and work weekends at South Brunswick and all those places. You know.
So you had a job that was terrific, but still, come the war, come early, well into 1942, 18 years of age. You decided to enlist?
Yes.
What were your motivations? Why did you do that, George?
Well, I went home for holidays, my first holidays from the railways, and all my mates that I grew up with and played with had gone to the war because you had to join up whether you, you know, was protected or not, because as soon as you turned 18, you had to join up.
Right.
That's when the Japs bombed Darwin.
I understand. You'd had a bit of action, though, because I understand when you did get, shall we say, approached or molested that night at Auburn. You fought them off. You fought these guys off.
Oh, yeah. Well, I used to knee them in the balls and, you know, that sort of cave, and then run for my life.
So you could look after yourself.
Yeah.
So you enlisted in Melbourne, did you?
No, Wangaratta.
Wangaratta.
Yeah.
All right.
The drill hall in Rowan Street.
Yes. Okay. How did you get in the Air Force? Tell me about that.
How?
How did you manage to get the Air Force?
Well, I went and fronted up to this fella at the...
Yeah.
desk, and he said, what service do you want in?
Yeah.
And I didn't know what he meant by service. And he said, do you want Army, Navy, Air Force? And I said, I want to go in the Air Force.
What was that?
Well, I tell you, there you are. Heard of Amy Johnson?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Well, Amy Johnson landed in the paddock and next to Uncle Charlie's paddock, right? At Bowser.
Right.
And in Haney's paddock at Over Butchers.
Yep. And that was near Wangaratta?
The 19, that was 3 miles, about a mile and a half up the road.
Yep.
At North Wangaratta.
Yep.
About 3 miles from Wangaratta. And Grandma said, none of you kids go near that aeroplane. But George thought otherwise. So I walked through stubble paddocks.
Yeah.
They were nearly as high as me, or I was just over them, you know. And I got there and had a look, and she landed, and they built a shed on that paddock to put the aeroplane in. In them days, they used to fold the wings back, you
right.
know, to
yep.
put in. And it was too small, so they had it tied down.
You would have been, what, 8, 9 years of age then?
Oh, no, older than that. I left school at 14.
Oh, sorry. It was later. Okay.
Yeah.
And she landed there, and you went to see...
Hang on. Would I have been? No, I wouldn't have. I've been... That's when I was at school.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back in the 30s.
Yes.
Yeah. A wonderful...
1930 she landed.
Well, there you are. You were only 6 years of age.
Yeah, that's
there
right.
You are.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's right.
It was a wonderful name. She was an aviatrix. Always loved that word.
Yes, yeah. I didn't meet her,
yeah.
but I saw the aeroplane, and,
so you
and
were
that's what encouraged me to go to the Air Force.
Inspired to fly. Lovely story. Mm. So you enlisted in Melbourne, Wangaratta. And then off you went?
To Shepparton.
Shepparton.
Then done me rookie's course.
Right, yep.
And then I went to Hamilton to do me armourer's course.
Armourer, right. Yes. Okay.
So I done me armourer's course, and then I was posted to Point Cook, Malala, or anyway.
Was that a dangerous sort of course, doing that, learning to work with
armourers? No. It was just to learn how to fuse up a bomb and... You know,
that's not dangerous at all.
Well, we put plenty on the aircraft and none went off.
Okay.
I enjoyed it, you know.
Okay. Well, what was it? Bit of a change for you. You'd been wearing Railways uniform.
Yeah.
Now, Air Force uniform. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And so did you go to a few country dances and so on from the base?
Oh, dance was magnificent.
Was it?
I got some fantastic music.
Go on.
For dancing.
What did you like in particular?
Oh, I knew any of the old-time dancers, you know.
So?
I'll play the record in a minute if you want to know.
Take your partners for the...
Alberts or you know...
What do they say for the Pride of Erin or...
Yeah, the Pride of Erin or the Alberts or the Queen's Waltz.
Yes, the Gypsy Tap.
King's Waltz, who was in power.
Terrific stuff.
Yeah, and they were good dances.
So these were dances you'd go to near the base wherever you were posted, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, you'd go wherever. Yeah. I love dancing and I still do, but there's none on anymore.
Met some nice girls through that?
Oh, yeah, women, yeah. Like. But... That didn't seem to worry me, you know, sex or anything like that. That didn't worry me at all.
Did you drink and smoke?
Too young.
Yes, too young.
Yeah.
Did you drink and smoke very much, George, in those days?
I drank a lot of beer.
Did you?
Yeah, I wondered.
When
I was plastering in South Australia, I wouldn't go home unless I had 6 pints.
That's a fair old consumption.
Mighty oath it is. Yeah. And when I was married and lived on Morford Road, Seacombe Garden, I used to call in the Brighton pub.
Yeah.
One night there was a cricket match on, I think, and I got up in the stool and I used to tell everybody what the score was, you know, and that sort of came out. And pints, that's all we drank. Yeah. Ride me bike, then I got a motor car and drove that, never ever got picked up for drinking and driving or anything.
You were a very outgoing extrovert man. Were you like that in the Air Force, big... soul of the party, that sort of thing?
That's a different life altogether. That you had to do your own washing, you had to make your own bed, you know, and all that.
That's all right. So you did all that training, you were a trained armourer.
An armourer.
Yeah, and then you got posted.
Yeah. I forget now where the first, it might have been Point Cook, the first where I went to, I don't know.
Right.
And then I went to... Malala,
yep.
I was there. I don't know whether you know this or not, but there's 13 Air Force fellas buried at Malala.
Right.
That pranged, you know. But we used to put bombs on Avro Anson aircraft, and the pilots would go out and practice, you know, those practice bombs.
Yep.
Yeah, it was.
And what about... Overseas, active service, when did that start?
Overseas, I got posted to Gawler. I'll tell you in a minute where I was. Might have been at Point Cook. And I got posted to Gawler. And they were forming 21 Squadron, which was Voldy Vengeance. And they were dive bombers, and they used to dive 7 degrees beyond vertical.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we formed 21 Squadron at Gawler, and it took us 4 weeks to go from Lowood, from Gawler, to Lowood in Queensland by train.
Yes, 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
Before we talk about that, can I just get the name of those bombers from you? There's something Vengeance.
Voldy Vengeance.
How do you spell that?
Voldy, V-U-L-T-Y.
Yes, okay.
Vengeance, V-U-L-T-Y.
Okay. I hadn't heard of those, but...
No, they were dive bombers. Yeah. When we got to Port Moresby, they found out that they were useless up
there.
So they transferred all of us to different squadrons.
Yep.
And I went to 75 Squadron.
So it took you 4 weeks to get to...
To go from Gawler to Lowood, Queensland.
Why was this?
One day, we were out in the middle of nowhere, I don't know where the bloody hell we were, and the train stopped to wait for a passenger train to come through from Melbourne to, from Sydney to Brisbane. And we were 4 hours there waiting for, and there was a dam on the side of the road, as a railway line. And I went up to the engine driver and said, how long are you going to be? He said, I don't know. Well, I said, will you give me a blow on the whistle? I'm going to have a swim. And I went down and dived in the dam, and the rest of the squadron did. And the water was mud. When we got to Moresby, they split us all up and, and sent, you know, the fellas had been up there for years, them home, and we went, and I went to 75 Squadron.
Famous with a lot of squadron, other. 75 Squadron.
It was, yes. It was. Great station, great. It was a great squadron.
Because it had been there for a long time, I believe, and defended Moresby in the early days.
I went to a football match in Melbourne once. It was a charity match for one of the pilots. I can't think of his name. He went down. There's a lot of fellas out there in the middle of the ocean, I can tell you.
Exactly.
Still sitting in the aeroplane.
You were telling me, George, about three pilots from your squadron that went down. What happened?
Well, they crashed. And then we landed at Taji, and we found the three bodies hanging by the neck. Another ounce of flesh on them.
So they'd lost all their flesh.
Yeah.
What had happened? Why was that?
Well, the Japanese had to eat something. I'll tell you now, and I'm not frightened to say it either, that what I saw, what the Japs done to the women, I'll never forgive them.
Go on.
I'll never, ever forgive them. And what the Japs done to those prisoners of war, the 8th Division, you know, they used on the railway line, what they'd done to those guys, I'll never forgive them as long as I live. Anywhere in this house you can go and you'll never see a thing made in Japan.
What did, from your impression, the Japanese do to the women in New Guinea then? Tell me about that.
Well, when we went to Tarakan, we cleaned out a lot of the houses, and there was a woman there dead, and her private below was fly-blown.
Yes.
You know, they... we found a diagram of what Japan was going to do to Australia. They were going to build a tunnel from Darwin to Adelaide through the middle, put men on one side and women on the other side. No marriage.
Did you see many Japanese yourself?
No. Oh, a couple of prisoners, that's all.
Prisoners, I wondered. Okay. Yeah. And what was your reaction, I guess, George, when you saw them?
Well, we were prohibited from doing anything, you know what I mean? If, say, we had a Japanese prisoner, you couldn't go up and punch him in the nose because you'd do time, you know? We treated them, you know, as prisoners, same as the law says, but they didn't do that to our fellas.
So you've been in New Guinea, you were there a couple of
years. Then when we got to Tarakan, that's when we found the prisoners of war, and I don't want to see that again. That was terrible what they did to those fellas. Just bone, just, you know.
Sure, sure. You've been there a couple of years?
No, I didn't stay long in Tarakan.
No, I've been in New Guinea a couple of years altogether.
Oh, yeah, I was up there for me 18 months, I think.
Right, okay. Yeah. The Australian War Memorial nominal roll says date of January 7th. Date of discharge, 7th of January, 46.
Yeah.
So what did you do then after leaving the Air Force?
I went back to Wangaratta.
Yep.
And I got a job there as a monumental mason.
Really?
You know, putting headstones.
Yes, yes.
On graves and that. Yeah. That was my first job.
You didn't want to go back to the railways?
No.
No, okay. No. Monumental mason.
I was frightened to go back to the railway.
Frightened? What do you mean?
Well, I didn't tell them I was leaving. I just went and joined up.
All right. But you'd be to serve your country at war. That's all right.
Well, I don't... I know I was at Ascot Vale when I left the railways.
Yeah.
And it took them 6 weeks to decide whether I'd go into the Air Force or the railways.
Okay. I got you. So... you came back and you got a job as a monumental mason.
Yes.
Wangaratta.
Yes.
And do that for a few years? What did you do?
Oh, I done that for a few years. Yeah,
pretty hard work, I'd imagine.
Oh, it wasn't bad. You went out in the cemeteries by yourself.
Okay. Yeah.
Then I decided to leave Wangaratta and come over to Adelaide.
Now, why was this?
Because of my wife.
So you'd met a girl?
Yeah, I proposed to her in Wangaratta.
I got you.
And she said, if you don't come over, it's all off.
Right. Oh, Chuck.
So I packed up and left Wangaratta.
So you'd met Marie Theresa?
Marie Theresa Gregg.
M-A-R-I-E-T-H-E-R-E.
What happened there was that when we were at Malala, we used to go in every fortnight in Adelaide for a long weekend.
Yeah.
They give us Monday off, you know, which was a long weekend. And she, Harris Garfs were Harris Garfs.
Yes.
Now, that was a big hardware shop.
You know,
tools and that.
Yep.
But they had a hell of a big room, you know, and they had, we stayed there at Harris Garfs, and they had beds all along the wall where we used to camp, you know, just one after the other. And my ex-wife used to go in there and make the beds. And that's where I met her.
I see. So, you had met her in Wangaratta originally, is
no,
that right?
No, I met her in Harris Garth.
In Harris Garth.
Yes.
Okay. So, you'd moved, you'd been working for the Monumental Mason.
Yeah, McLaughlin's Memorial.
Right. McLaughlin Memorial?
McLaughlin.
Yeah, okay. And you left that job?
Yeah, and come over to South Australia.
To see...
Yeah, to be with the wife.
So how had you met her first? Where did you first meet?
At the Harris Garfs.
When you were
where we were sleeping in. So you used to make the beds and we'd carry on a bit, you know.
You were staying in Adelaide?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got you now.
I was at Malala, Air Force Station.
Right.
Malala was where they had Abro Anson's, you know, teaching the bombers. And we used to go into Adelaide every weekend, and I met her new weekend there.
During the war you'd met her?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you meet? Can you remember that?
Oh, acting a fool, you know.
Well, what were you doing, huh?
Oh, well, you know, you have fun with them, you know, or something like that. Or...
What, was it a dance or something?
No, it was just in the room, you know.
In the room, all right.
Then I said, he's coming out, and we... down at Woodville, there used to be a place down there where a lot of girls stayed, what's her name? And they were there helping too, you know what I mean? And
hostel.
You know, it's just a...
Yeah, I got you. But she didn't want to go and live at Wangaratta, so...
No, she had a mother.
Yeah.
A father had died.
I got you.
And she came over with this lady, sent her money to come over.
Right.
I don't know. She hadn't done that. I don't know what would happen. But that's where I proposed.
All right. All right. Good. Okay. Yeah. You were a Presbyterian. Marie Theresa looks like a Catholic now.
That's right.
Did this cause any difficulties?
Oh, it did. It was terrible in our family.
Was it?
Yeah. Grandma was a Presbyterian.
Yeah.
And grandfather was a very, very strict Catholic.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't turn for him.
Right.
Oh, it was trouble there.
Okay.
And, of course... It came up when we were going to get married, and I changed my religion for her. Now I've gone back to the United Church because she's passed on.
So you actually took instruction in the Catholic Church?
I became a Catholic.
Became a Catholic, yes. Fair enough, too. Mm. All right, so you were now married, living in Adelaide?
Yeah.
What did you do now, George?
What did I do in Adelaide?
What sort of job did you do,
Well, I wasn't a tradesman.
Mm-hmm.
And... I wanted to be a plasterer, solid plasterer. So I got a hawk and a trowel and come over to Adelaide, you know. And I went out. Somebody said, go to Weir's, S.J. Weir's Builder.
Yes.
Yeah. They were building housing trust homes at Kilburn. Yeah. I'll never forget that as long as I live. I never even used a bloody trowel. And I went in there and stood at the, they had, in them days they used to have mortar in the middle of the room and you'd walk backwards and forwards. And I'm standing there waiting for the labourer to bring in some mud, you know, we call it mud. And the boss said, what do you think you're doing? I said, I'm a plasterer, you know. And I learned the trade there.
On the job.
S.J. Weir signed me up to learn my apprenticeship.
Well done, okay.
Front, yeah. I never get that, as long as I live.
So you stuck with that trade for a long time?
Yes, I did. I done that. Mm. That was the main trade. But as I grew older, you had a job, you know, like In them days, they used to build housing trust homes one after the other. And I decided to go out on my own with pre-construction over at Edwardstown. And I contracted the plaster of the homes. And you had finished one, you went on to the next one, you know, and that sort of caver. And the boss come down one night, 1963 that was. Bob Menzies brought down a credit squeeze, and we all got put off. He come down and he said, "Sorry, George, there's no more work because we're miles ahead of our quota, and we've got to catch up on that." So I had to put my men off, and then I did all sorts of jobs. I got a job in the Marion Council as a gardener.
Yep.
And I was president of the Plasters Union.
Good on you.
Okay. That didn't go down too good. Plaster being a gardener.
Exactly.
And then I got a job with Adelaide City Council as a bitumen foreman, all that, you know, in the paper. Right. Bitumen foreman with Adelaide City Council.
Right.
And then within the council, Adelaide Council, they advertised for market manager.
Yep.
So I sat down and wrote for that and got that.
Because you became general manager, is that right?
Manager, my name's up in the market wall.
General manager of the Adelaide Central Market.
Yes. 15 years.
That's a terrific job.
I often think, why did I get all these jobs? And I reckon it was me writing that got me there because I've got a terrific hand writing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got the job and they all said at home he won't last. He's not an inside job. And And fella, he's an outside worker, but I stayed there.
And then you retired?
From the market,
From the market.
And I came up here.
Now, we're up in Blythe now, or are we...
I retired to Clare. I bought a property there.
Really?
Yeah, a house and some land.
Right.
And then my wife died. And
did you have... did you run any... cattle or you had some milkers before?
You take this house. This house was a park ranger's house at Warabra in Parklands. It had a window in every corner so he could go out and look, you know, out in the parkland.
Yep.
Here, there was a big hole in the wall where the fireplace was for the lounge, one there for the kitchen. So
you moved to Clare. You had a little market garden, something like that?
No, I didn't clear. I plastered.
Plastered there? It went back to trade?
I plastered a few houses in there.
Yeah, fine. Clear. And then later on in life, you moved to the township of Blythe.
Yeah, that's right.
Where are we talking about?
Moved here in 1990.
1990, thank you. Okay. Where, among many things, you've got an award... Senior Citizen of the Year.
Yeah.
Well done.
I'm proud of that.
Well done. That's terrific.
Didn't know anything about it. Just came.
And the local paper knows you well?
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
But they rang today. But they wanted to get...
Oh, well, what happened here? I got a bit of a kind heart, you know, and I do a lot for people and whatever. And I make quite a few rhubarb and cinnamon cakes. They go mad over them, and you know that.
Good on you.
And I give them to people and all that sort of jazz.
I should say, for the benefit of the tape, there's a very fine rhubarb crop just outside the door here. So
I like helping people, whatever.
And you and Marie had children?
Four. Yeah. Three boys and a girl.
Right.
And I worked my guts out to educate them.
Yep.
They all got matriculation, and Michael and Chris, they're my two oldest. They retired at 55 with their superannuation. I don't know why they did that. It upset me a little bit. And I remember going down and seeing Michael one day, and he said I was getting more on my pension than he was getting it, and interest rate went down any lower, he'd have to get a job.
Yes.
There in Adelaide. Michael, he was in the Adelaide, he worked for the pathology down at the hospital in North Terrace there.
Yep.
Chris had a big position in the telecom.
Right.
Paul is manager, state manager of superannuation in Adelaide, and Sharon's up in Queensland.
Right.
She was state manager of Johnson's Products. So I was determined that they got educated.
Well done, yes.
And they all got matriculation. And
but lots of photographs on the wall.
Yeah.
Do they come and see you in Blythe at all? Or?
No, I don't see any of them.
Oh.
None of them come near me.
Yeah.
I don't know why or when they got up.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've obviously got a lot of grandchildren too.
Oh, that's Michael's sons.
Yes.
Their grandchildren. That's me. That's Michael, my eldest.
We're looking at an early photograph there.
That's
yes.
his wife.
Yes.
That's his son there.
Yes.
That's me.
Yep.
That's the daughter there. You know them three up there.
I'm looking now at a photograph of George with Bill Denny, former head of Veterans SA, and Mike Rann, the Premier.
Yeah.
When was that photograph taken?
About
must have been 5-6 years ago.
When we opened up the bridges.
The bridges here?
Yeah, on the Northern Expressway.
Ah, right, okay, fair enough. And you're wearing your metal ribbons?
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yes,
okay.
I do that.
But the family don't come and see you, that's a shame.
Well, let them be that way, okay. You know. I don't know why or anything.
But you wouldn't mind if they did.
Oh, I'd love it.
Love it. Okay, yeah. Good on you. Okay, that's lovely.
That's the mayor of Antique Day. That's the mayor of Clare.
Yes. Another photograph of.
And you know
George.
That one there? That was here recently, that one.
The 70th anniversary victory in the Pacific. And there's a photograph of you there with Bill Denny, and that was in August 2015.
Yeah, recently.
Yes.
That was down at the parade ground.
Yes, okay. Look, we've had tremendous talk for this hour or more. I guess I'd like to wrap it up by asking, how did the military experience change your life? What did it make?
It was anything I knew.
Go on.
You know, like, I never had any trouble with it. I done, you know, when I was on guard, I done guard duty. And.
But how did it change you as a person? Did it make you aware of overseas cultures or different values or discipline, that sort of thing? How did it have a big effect
no.
on you as a man?
No, it didn't. It didn't. I did everything right, you know, done. But I reckon I can't prove this, but I reckon Grandma's bringing up made me what I am.